KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. San Francisco is the first city to use demand-based rates for all of its parking meters. We'll explain what that may mean to your pocketbook and to the availability of parking spots in the city. Then at 9:30, the California State Assembly is among the institutions being rocked by accusations of sexual misconduct and harassment. We'll talk to Assembly Speaker Anthony Rendon about that and why he says the Republican tax plan will, quote, put the screws to California plain and simple. It's all coming up after this news. Welcome to this morning's forum. I'm Michael Krasny. The San Francisco Municipal Transportation Agency Board voted yesterday to expand surge pricing to all city parking meters. The program currently covers about 7,000 meters, and the agency says that expanding the program will make it easier to find a parking space. Rates will range from 50 cents to $8 an hour. That's according to the agency, and the move makes San Francisco the only United States city to utilize demand-based rates for all of its parking meters. Now, I know there are many of you who probably have opinions about this beyond San Francisco. You can hear us, in fact, throughout the United States if you're listening on Sirius. And since this is the first city to use demand-based rates, you may want to weigh in and you may want to express your opinion. We're going to talk to a couple of people and get some analysis of it. But let me give the phone number before I do anything else. The number to call is 866-733-6786. That's toll-free. If you'd like to let us know what you think about expanding demand-based pricing for parking meters, we'd certainly like to hear from you. And again, you can join us at 866-733-6786. This is a half-hour segment, so feel free to join us now. And let me tell you who is joining us for the whole half-hour segment. Tom McGuire is with us by phone. He's director of the Sustainable Streets Division at the San Francisco Municipal Transportation Agency. And welcome, Tom McGuire.
Good morning. Thank you for having us.
Good morning to you. Good to have you. Also good to have here in studio with us Michael Cabanatuan, who is transportation writer for the San Francisco Chronicle. Michael, good to have you back with us.
Good to be here.
Let me begin, Tom McGuire, if I may, with you. And I should say that this is surge pricing, and I guess it's going to begin in 2018. But let's talk about what it's going to do. I mean, it's going to make parking easier?
Well, it's certainly going to make parking easier, although, Michael, I would say that we prefer not to call it surge pricing, and that's because when we think of surge pricing is really when a business raises the price of something, often quite rapidly and often without customers knowing, and you only find out when you get the bill. And we see this with the complaints people have about things like Uber. The policy that we're putting in place here in San Francisco is really about gradual and transparent approaches to tweaking the prices of parking. And so while we're certainly using pricing to be one of our tools in managing demand, we don't think it's really quite the same as surge pricing.
Well, you're talking about an hourly rate that's based on demand or fluctuation, right?
That's right.
And block by block and day by day?
It would be block by block and day by day. That's right.
And in addition to the advantage of, from your perspective, providing more parking spaces, what else will it do? I presumably bring down the amount of pollutants, too?
That's right. I mean, our goal is really to set the price of parking actually as low as possible without causing a parking shortage. And by doing that, and by raising the price or sometimes lowering the price, in fact, we found when we ran a pilot for 3 years in San Francisco, we were more likely to lower the price than to raise the price of parking. But it certainly has very positive impacts on traffic congestion, on safety in the neighborhoods, and on pollution and greenhouse gases and all the things you mentioned.
And is technology ready?
The technology is ready for sure. We proved that out for 3 years here in San Francisco.
And more people presumably are going to use public transportation? Are you sure of that or fairly certain of that?
Well, that's always our big picture goal. We've been a transit-first city for 40 years, and we want to make sure that transit's the best option for getting around. But we also know that thousands of people park. We have 28,000 parking meters in the city, and we want to make sure that those businesses and those parking customers really have a good customer experience.
Again, Tom McGuire with us, directs the Sustainable Streets Division at the San Francisco Municipal Transportation Agency. And Michael Cabanatuan's here in studio, transportation writer for the Chronicle. Michael, this is an offshoot of a three-year federal funding. I think Tom kind of intimated at it, but tell us about the history of this.
Well, there was a program called SF Park. It was part of, I think, a collection of federal programs to discuss or to sort of experiment with how demand-based pricing would work. One of the original plans was to test it on the Golden Gate Bridge, but a lot of people objected to that. And so some of that money went into SF Park. But SF Park was the idea of testing how demand-based pricing would work on city streets at city meters. And it included some of the more popular, more congested neighborhoods in the city, Fisherman's Wharf, Financial District, downtown, the Marina District.
But only 10% of spaces are actually metered, though, right?
I'm not sure of what the total is.
I think that's the case. Because, and I mention that because there are a lot of scofflaws and there are a lot of people who have special parking permits and licenses and so forth. Is this going to, maybe somebody would argue, too many cars to make a dent?
I think that anytime you can make any kind of a dent, it helps. I mean, if you're a driver looking for a space and one space pops open, that's good for you. That's as much of a dent as you need.
And the concern that this is going to benefit those with more money more?
MTA argues that that's not the case, that, people with money can certainly afford to park in more of the places. But part of the theory behind it is that if it's more expensive to park in the block that's right in front of a movie theater or a store, that if you go a block or two away, that it'll be cheaper. And in some cases, I'd say that's true. And in other cases, it isn't necessarily. But we'll see now that it's expanding citywide.
Well, let me have you weigh in on that. Can you, Tom McGuire?
Sure. I mean, one of the things that we found with the pilot, and one of the things that we've certainly expect to see with a citywide rollout, is that the average price of parking will go down. And that means that at the very high demand locations, we certainly found in the pilot that places like Fisherman's Wharf had extremely high parking demand. In those locations, we did raise the price of parking, and we were able to reduce double parking there. But we also were able to, as Michael alluded to, create opportunities where the price of parking might go up to, $3, $3.50 an hour on the most popular block, but just around the corner, we found that the price would drop as low as 75 or 50 cents an hour. And so there are always discounts kind of built into the way the policy is designed. But overall, the price of parking does generally go down, but at the very high demand locations, it does go up.
And talk about the floor and the ceiling in terms of cost, could you?
So the floor, it would be 50 cents an hour, which is significantly cheaper than the typical $2 an hour rate that we have citywide. We found that in the SF Park pilot that Michael described, we found that about 20% of the block did drop down to that floor rate. The ceiling or the peak is $8 an hour, which is a rate we've never reached at any spot in the SF Park areas. We've had something like 0.4% of blocks in the SF Park areas did get to the $7 range. And those are places you might expect, the heart of Fisherman's Wharf and a couple places in the Financial District.
All right. I want to get to our callers. We have a lot of them. But first, a question from Beth, and let me go to you on this, Michael. Do people with disabled license plates, not placards, which can be abused, have to pay when they park in San Francisco using a parking meter?
No, they don't. The state law says that it's free.
All right. Let's bring in our callers, and let me begin with you, David. You're on.
Yeah, hi, guys. First off, I think this is a terrific idea. I think anything that can help reduce congestion in the city and encourage people to use mass transit, I think is great. I drive in the city. There are times when I need my car, and I don't mind paying up. And I love the idea that, by having that variable pricing, at times you'll even be paying less. I'd also be interested in your comments on, I know in London, for example, they have effectively, I guess, surge pricing for driving in the center of the city. Is that something that you guys are also considering?
Yeah, Tom McGuire, I know you don't like to hear surge pricing, but could you address the question, please?
Sure. Yeah, that's not something that we're currently considering. But I do think that it's important to think about the experience that drivers have. I think nobody who drives in San Francisco, everyone who drives in San Francisco, rather, knows how frustrating it is to go down a street where every single space is taken and there's double parking everywhere. And so it's correct that the use of the pricing tool is just one of the ways in which we can loosen up a few of those spaces and help people get to the curb. But no plans right now to do anything like the London-style congestion pricing.
Let me thank the caller. Michael, maybe you can give us a little bit of rundown on how this works, or this is the first time it's been done in a U.S. city, but what do we know from abroad?
Well, this has been done in San Francisco before as part of the pilot program, SF Park, and then it's continued since the pilot program in those neighborhoods. And, I think Seattle has picked up pieces of it in parts of the city, and I know Berkeley has something relatively related to this in downtown Berkeley. But the way it basically works is and I've told people that if you call it surge pricing, it should be surge pricing with a 3-month delay, because what happens is they look at the meters and they determine how many spaces have been occupied or available on a given block in the previous 3 months, and then they adjust prices according to that. I can't remember the exact numbers, but I think it's somewhere around, if they've had 80% occupancy, so full most of the time, it goes up by a quarter during the next 3-month period. If it's 60 to 80%, it stays the same. And if it's less than 60%, then it goes down by a quarter. So rates can go up and down based block by block. And there are also 3 time bands, too. There's the morning period, there's sort of a midday period, and then there's an evening period. And so they look at all of those, which they can now do because meters are electronic, they're networked, they're interconnected, and they can determine what the prices should be based on occupancy rates.
You got all these city wireless connected meters, basically, in terms of getting the data that you need. Yeah,
right.
Yeah. Now, let me get some more callers on here. Let me go next to you, Robert. You're on.
Yeah, hi. I had a two-part question. I don't think my answer off the air, but basically, my point was this: if parking is so hard to find in the city, why are we selling huge blocks and half a block to corporations like Ford to put bikes up?
Yeah, Tom McGuire.
Where does that revenue from those bikes go? Kind of curious.
Yeah, thanks for the question, Robert. Not a great connection. You heard it, I think, though, Tom, didn't you?
Sure, I did, yeah. And so, we're talking today about parking, but as the caller said, you can't separate parking from all the other people who are trying to use the street. And one of the great things about San Francisco is you've got a lot of choices for how you get around. We are trying to make Muni work better for everyone. We're trying to make this a safe and convenient place to ride a bicycle, and we're trying to reduce traffic congestion at the same time. And so, the bike share stations are part of the strategy to make bicycling a viable alternative, so that people can see that they have an alternative to driving. At the same time, number of parking spaces being removed for things like bike share stations and other loading zones and things like that is pretty minimal compared to the 28,000 parking meters we have and the over 20,000 off-street parking spaces we have in our garage.
Yeah, I thought you had over 30,000, in fact, just in terms of numbers. But I wonder what you say to a listener named Joe who writes, demand-based pricing is fine if people know the price schedule in advance.
That's right. It's very important that that people get the information they need to make a good decision. And we've committed to putting a dynamic map on our website. We just launched a new mobile-friendly website yesterday at SFMTA, and it's got a map of the parking rates at every single meter in the city. So
maybe you can give out that website?
SFMTA.com.
That's it. What do you say to John, though, who writes, another great reason to stay out of San Francisco, which I do already. Municipalities do everything they can to drive away business. Then they wonder why they're always broke.
Well, we hope that people who drive to San Francisco will see that actually parking gets more convenient and even a little less expensive as a result of this program.
All right. We bring in more of our callers. Let me go next to you, Christopher. You're on. Good morning.
Yeah, I had a quick question about, this is basically a supply and demand-based system, but I would like to point out that our housing market here is also based on supply and demand. And I want to ask, what's going to happen when certain blocks just go all the way up to the top tier and stay there permanently? I mean, wouldn't that sort of happen downtown where people have to pay the meters because they work there and they're in office buildings? Won't certain areas just become maxed out forever?
Yeah. Your thoughts on that, Michael Cabanatuan?
Well, my guess is that they would eventually make it to the $8 limit, and then the MTA Board of Directors would have to consider whether it wanted to raise that or not. They can only go up by 25 cents or a quarter per quarter, so they can go up by about a dollar a year. So it would take a while to get there, but you know, they can always reset the rates.
Tom McGuire?
Yeah, well, one of the nice things we learned from the pilot is that after a few rate changes, we're able to sort of hit a sweet spot or an equilibrium rate, as we call it in economics, for most of the meters. And once you hit that sweet spot rate, where, as Michael described very well, the parking occupancy is between 60 and 80%, meaning that there's always one or two spaces available on the block, the rate doesn't change. And actually, as the pilot went on over the three-year period, something like 80% of the blocks by the end were not changing rates. So we'd sort of found the right rate, and that rate was nowhere near, as I said before, that rate was nowhere near the $7 max. In most cases, it was actually quite a bit lower than the original rate.
Let me thank Christopher for the call and go right to you. Emily, thank you for waiting. You're on the air.
Oh, hi. I think this is also a great idea. I was curious, will you have an app where people can see real time what the pricing is? And then also, could you see where the available parking spots are?
Yeah. Tom McGuire.
So we're going to, as I said before, we'll definitely be putting all live pricing data on sfmta.com, but we're also going to be sharing the data with third-party app providers. One thing we found is that when government tries to create apps, it generally takes too long and the result's not so good. And so our strategy has been to work with companies like Google Maps or Waze or any other app providers out there to make sure that they can share that information about both the price and also, as the caller suggested, we should be able to derive from the parking meters what the occupancy is as well.
And we'll take more of you. I'm sorry, Tom, you paused there for a second. You had something to add?
Oh, no, that's all.
And again, Tom McGuire directs the Sustainable Streets Division at San Francisco's Municipal Transportation Agency. Thank the caller. We're going to go to more calls in just a moment. But let me go back to you, Michael Gadwin-Atwan. Here's Ann, who says, how much cash do we need to carry? How much time are we going to burn feeding quarters into the meter? Won't those full meters make a more attractive target for theft? And do we really want to resort to using our credit cards with the risk of our numbers being stolen? While the city is at it, please institute surge pricing, there it is again, for muni parking tickets and car towing. Well, there's a lot embedded in that, but let's see if we can deconstruct it to some extent. I mean, let's talk about the feeding with quarters first.
Well, first of all, San Francisco has replaced all of its meters. There are no more of the mechanical coin-fed meters. You don't go and feed nickels or dimes or quarters anymore. You can if you want to. But most people, I think, either use credit cards or there's an SFMTA parking card. But also there is the ability to sign up and use your phone to pay. And, you know, that comes in handy, especially if you need to feed a meter while you're out doing something. You don't have to walk back and, you know, plug in coins or your credit card. So, you know, I don't think you need to carry around bags of quarters like
but
you
she's also
to.
Making it seem as if it's a lot more vulnerable for a credit card to be stolen if you use it in a parking meter. I don't know that that's the case. Do you?
I don't know. I mean, I have not heard of any instances of that. I suppose there could be. But, you know, I mean, it happens at gas stations. It happens at ATMs inside banks. I don't know that it's more or less common at a meter.
Here's another Ann who says, I'd like to see parking fees done away with altogether. I would rather have an additional fee tagged onto my yearly registration so I don't feel nickel and dimed every time I look for parking. Let's look for some more calls, and let's go to you next. Joey, you're on.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking the call. I sort of echo the sentiment of the previous caller who made an analogy to housing, that the issue with the scheme or a program like this is that it takes into account only demand and not sort of any of the other social conditions that relate to demand, you know, such as the concentration of government offices, healthcare, things like that, in neighborhoods that tend to have incredibly high demand for parking that can make it harder to access those things for the people who have precisely less money to pay for parking so that they can access them.
All right. Anybody want – Michael, you want to comment on that? Tom? We'll let it stand.
Sure. Well, I think one of the things that makes the market for parking a little different than the market for housing is everyone needs housing, but in the parking world, while I want to repeat that I actually think this is going to reduce the price of parking at most meters in the city, people who are uncomfortable paying more, less, or anything for parking do have the ability to use our great transit system. So, you know, in a way that a suburban city that might try something like this wouldn't, we have Muni. We have a great system that for $225 you can get anywhere in the city. So there's the market, the supply and demand is a little more complicated in transportation than it is in housing. And that's, again, because we're a transit-first city.
Well, we want to encourage use of public transportation, and I think that's the intent here. As you said earlier, Tom, here's a comment from a listener named Curtis who says, there is no price elasticity in parking if demand is significantly greater than supply. Therefore, any increase in price will not change the demand but will increase revenues. If parking revenues increase, will you use the excess revenues to fund public transportation initiatives? Tom McGuire.
There's a couple responses to that. First of all, again, I look back to the 3-year pilot where we found that what is true in theory is definitely true in practice. The price of parking does affect demand, and it does affect people's choices about how and where they park. The other point about funding mass transit is one of the great things about the way we operate in San Francisco is that because we're a single agency, the MTA operating both the Muni system and our parking and traffic operations, our charter setup essentially takes parking revenue and helps, and that's part of the solution for funding Muni operations.
Let me bring another caller aboard here, and that's Kevin from San Francisco. Kevin, join us. Oh, I'm sorry. No, it's Mary Molly from San Francisco. Mary Molly, go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm a native of San Francisco, and I am really frustrated that the city is trying to force everybody to take Muni, but Muni cannot even handle the load of passengers it has now. So if everybody was to get out of their cars and take Muni, nothing would ever happen because nobody could get to work, no businesses would be able to function. It's just really frustrating. And another aspect, the city is becoming sort of this like young and able-bodied city because I have disabled family members. So if we want to go somewhere, we have to drive. And the whole idea that you can't go and park, like Market Street, ever since they closed it off to traffic and you can only bike, you know, or be in a taxi, Market Street businesses are dead to me. They don't exist because I cannot drive down Market Street to even see what there is with my family.
You've raised two important points, which I thank you for, Mary Molly. Let me go to Michael Cabanatuan. Michael, first of all, Muni too crowded?
You know, it really depends on the time of day and what lines you're on. I ride Muni fairly often, several times a week, and I'm generally able to get a seat. But I know that if you're on the Anjuda in the morning or the evening, coming into the city or heading out on the way home, it's standing room only. There are places where you cannot get on.
And her point about disabled people and the necessity of driving?
That's a big problem in San Francisco. There are so many disabled parking permits, some valid, some not valid. There are not enough spaces. And, as the city grows and as it changes, there's this desire and this demand to share the streets, that they're not just for cars, but they're for bikes, they're for bike stations. There need to be pedestrian crossing bulbs and islands that make it safer. And so it's changing. And when there are winners, there are also losers.
Well, thank you, Michael Cabanatuan. Good to have you with us. And thank you, Tom McGuire. Good to have you with us. And thank you, our listeners. We have another segment of Forum right up ahead, and we're going to meet Speaker Anthony Rendon. Actually, we're going to not meet him. We're going to talk to him again, this time about tax plan, sexual harassment claims against assembly members, and more.